Yeah, okay, song, song, and he picks up his guitar or his lute, and he's trying to get a song. God, but then Stuart's gonna, oh my God, and then, and I can picture the scene, and my heart goes to him, because the minute the tour was over, he wrote a musical, bang, like that. His talent came right back, and as soon as the tour was over, I wrote a 90-minute, you know, concerto, and a, you know, just I've been writing orchestra. It's exploding with creativity the minute we're out of there. But, you know, that sounds kind of weird, but it's strange. But when the three of us get on that stage in front of an audience that is responding to those songs, that's where the Police exists today.
Well, Stuart, thank you so much for joining us on World College Radio Day. It's been a treat.
Well, a treat for me too.
For the full interview with Stuart Copeland, please go to collegeradio.org. Thanks to all the participating stations who helped make this simulcast possible. For more information about College Radio Day and the College Radio Foundation, a national nonprofit charity dedicated to supporting college radio in the USA, please visit collegeradio.org. I'm Len O'Kelly, and for the Board of Directors of College Radio Day, long live College Radio.
This is WHFR, Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, and on College Radio Day, too. We're all celebrating around here, and that's, of course, we're college radio every day, but we want to let you know that there's college radio stations all across the country, almost 4,000 of them, by the way, all nonprofits, all with student staffs or volunteers from the community, and they're doing the kind of programming you can't get anywhere else. And we're one of the few in Detroit from a college that provides that kind of diversity. And thank you for listening to this show. This is the new WHFR Journal, because it's new every Friday, okay, from 1 to 2 o'clock. And remember, if you miss the live broadcast, you can always catch it on our podcast from WHFR.fm anytime after broadcast. Just select talk shows, WHFR Journal specifically, and the date, and today is October the 2nd, if I didn't already say that. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here of WHFR, and I'm joined in the studio by some very special guests, and I'll let our WHFR news director, John Conroy, do the introductions and begin the interview.
Well, thank you, Jay. We're welcoming Sal Haji, who is with she's a field operations coordinator with the Michigan or Freedom Center Family Support Group. And Sal was introduced to me by my friend David Dyer, who is a Vietnam vet and author and friend for a number of years and lives on Gros Isle as well. And I want to welcome Sal and welcome David. And also Janet, his wife, is here on the other side of the studio.
Thank you, Jan.
Oh, you're welcome. And Sal, I wanted to ask you first, please describe your journey as well as motivation that brought you to the United States.
Well, I'm an immigrant of Iraq. My family immigrated here in 1972. Unfortunately, with the war-torn country and the problems, and my brothers would have been very easily drafted into that war, and my mother and my sisters sought way out. So we had an aunt who lived here in America, and she got us our visitor's visas, as you can say, to come out to this country. But it wasn't as easy as could be, hop on a plane and come over. You know, we first had to leave Iraq, you know, like they say, leave in the middle of the night so nobody knows. And we left with the family very separated. My mother left with all the children that were under the age of 18, And my father went in a different direction with the older kids. And we lived in a couple Middle Eastern countries till we finally arrived where we felt we were safe in Lebanon. And there we were for a couple years. And then we were joined with my father at that point for a short time before we actually made our journey to come to America. And I give all the credit to my wonderful mother. I don't know if I could do it if I was in her shoes. I have five children myself. I couldn't imagine grabbing them and relocating to a different country just so we could have a better life and leaving their father and the rest of the children behind. But once we came here, we did have the support of my aunt. They helped us get started and, you know, with housing and support that we needed. And a couple years later, my father was able to join us as well when we were able to get the proper paperwork for him to come join us. And then one by one, my other siblings were able to join us as well.
Wow. And so how old were you when you made it to the United States?
Well, when we first left Iraq, I was 7. Okay. So when we made it to America, I was 9 and a half.
Wow.
We made it here in May of 72, and that September I turned 9.
And then where did you settle at first when you got to America?
With my aunt. We lived with her. She lived in Livonia. We lived with her for a short time till we could find our own housing. And then we lived in Detroit, 7 Mile John, our area, for a short time. And then right after that, we ended up finding a home in Troy that we rented and then eventually bought.
Thank you. Wow. Okay. And then what... your involvement with the Freedom Center, when did that begin?
Oh, goodness. Well, when my son decided to join the Marine Corps, obviously I had no support from my family because we escaped the war to get away from that, to have a better life for our family and our children. And then my son wanted to go into the Marine Corps, and he told me it was something he's always wanted to do. And he didn't go right out of high school. He went after a couple years of college. He went in just after his 21st birthday. So I, of course, like every military mom, cried for 3 months straight till a friend came along and said, okay, we need to get you out of the house and get you involved, meet other military families, talk to other military moms. This will help you get through it. And we did that, and that did help me. And I decided I'm going to dive in deeper with it. I want to go beyond just a support group for me and talk. I want to be able to help these guys. I want to help them by sending them care packages. I want to help them by being there for their families they leave behind. I want to be there to help them when they return home for whatever their needs might be. So I got deeper involved with my support group that I was in, that I came to the grand opening ceremony of our second Freedom Center location, which is in the Troy area. And I attended it, and from that point, the president of the organization, Ken Pratt, said that, well, we've opened our doors, but we need somebody to run it. And there you are. So that was the beginning of it for me, going on 2 years of being part of the Freedom Center now.
So this has grown from two or three years, and how many members would you say had started, and then what's the growth as of now?
You know? We probably have over 300 members in our support group. As we have, where we're located, as we see the young men and women as they embark on their journey and their military careers as they first leave. So we have lots of families who are in need of hugs and support, or whatever, you know, the need may arise, we are there for them. So that's when we decided, let's form our own support group just for the Freedom Center families, and it has grown to about 300 members.
And there's probably no typical day for you as far as your responsibilities go, but give us a snapshot of what you do in a day.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm here today. I try as much as I can to get the word out, to let the people know that the Freedom Center does exist. You know, this is a wonderful organization that's there to support the military families and the service members. We're there for them. They can come through our doors as enlistees all the way to the retired state of their careers. I like to talk a lot about that and letting people know that, you know, we are there when other organizations can't be there to help out. I also run the center in the Troy location, and I also run the center in the Lansing location. So I make sure that it's fully staffed with volunteers, adequate supplies needed, reaching out to the families that need the support, because I'm, you know, placed right there with all the branches of military. Whatever the need might arise, I take care of it for them. And I organize fundraising events, and I collect donations. I'll go to whoever's donating the items, and I will go to the veteran in need who needs the item to deliver the items as well. So I organize myself, my family, friends, anybody who I can get my hands on to talk to bring them on board to help out. So we're busy 7 days a week.
And Sal, it's not just that you do that. That's not the only activity you're involved with. You have your own hairdressing?
Well, I am a hairdresser.
Hairdressing business?
Yeah. I'm kind of self-employed, just do a little bit at home. So I really don't, you know, I do 2 days a week at that and sometimes three just to help out because I have some clients who don't want to let go.
Okay.
So I do that. And I'm involved with, you know, with my kids' school. I'm on the PTO and I did Girl Scouts with my daughter and so forth. I try to keep busy. If you want a job done, give it to a busy person. I guess that's what
I was going to say. You don't have to try to be busy. I know I've met Mackenzie.
Yes.
And your daughter, and you have a big family that
we
you're
do.
Responsible, that you're taking care of. You
know? We do. But everybody puts their share in, so everybody helps out because you've met Mackenzie. She's been a part of a lot of the events that we have done, the fundraising and the outings, and she's first to dive in. When she's home from school, she will come up to the Freedom Center with me at the recruiting station, and she will target the young recruits, and she'll go up to them, you want to play a puzzle with, you know, do a puzzle with me or play a game with me, and that kind of helps take their mind off of what is happening before they actually ship off to boot camp. And a lot of them have come to me and said, you know, she's really a sweet kid, that really helped me. Got me more relaxed with having her here, and that's a blessing to me that she's right on board.
You bet. Yes. What do you think is the future of this organization, the Freedom Center Family Support Group? What do you see it evolving into in the near future, and especially in Michigan?
Well, we are a Michigan-based organization. Our legal description is Michigan Armed Forces Hospitality Center, also known as the Freedom Center. Our first location was started November 11 of 2011, and it started at the McNamara Terminal. We do not have a USO in the state of Michigan, so we are in place of a USO. We are there to provide hospitality for the traveling military at that location, but at my location, it's where it's like a recruiting station where they actually sign up and leave for boot camp. So we've opened that one since I've come on board. And then we've ventured out and opened one at our Lansing recruiting station as well. So now we have that facility. And we're planning on opening our doors this November at the North Terminal. Mm-hmm. So now both airports are going to have a Freedom Center in them. Right. Our goal is to be able to possibly in the near future do something of a mobile unit in the Michigan area.
Okay.
Where we can be at deployments and homecomings of our military loved ones.
More greetings.
Real, yep. And I know of where I'm located, I have the commanders that do come through, and they have asked me numerous times, are you planning on opening more Freedom Centers at the other recruiting stations throughout the United States?
Mm-hmm.
So I would love to see that happen because it is wonderful what we do.
It
has an impact on everybody.
Wow.
The families, the young warriors, as I call them. You know, they come in 17, 18 years old. Some of them, parents have to sign for them.
Well, and besides the 17 and 18-year-olds, we have a veteran here who's not 17. But he was also affected and improved by meeting with your group. Why don't you describe that with David a little bit about Dave?
Well, how we met David is we were at an event together that was honoring our military.
Well, I first met Sal at our Veterans Gala on Gros Seal, would have been 3 years ago. And this was a group of that was called the Military Moms, Michigan Military Moms, but she has since gone into the Freedom Center. And I want to mention also that at the Freedom Center, it's all retired military and all veterans are welcome there also. And I had put 21 years in the Army, and it was about 8 years ago that I developed a disease called Parkinson's. And once this happened, I gave up alcohol and I started writing. And since I've written many stories and even a book, From Darkness to Light. And Sal, when I met her at our gala, invited me to speak at their next dinner, which would have been in November. And I did, and I just kind of was taken by that. And every month after that, we meet once a month for dinner at a different restaurant. And it's quite an organization, believe me.
Sal, and then so you met David, and then how has that changed the whole focus of the group?
Oh. Meeting David was a blessing. I mean, I've heard of many service members, especially Vietnam veterans, but being able to connect with David and to hear his stories and bring those stories live to our group has given a whole new meaning to what we do, you know, to giving back, because they never had the welcome.
No.
They've never were thanked for their services.
That's right.
When they came back, it was a walk of shame, unfortunately, and it's sad to see that. We will never let that happen, ever, with what we do. We are so thankful and so grateful to everybody that serves or has served. This country wouldn't be what it is if it wasn't for those who served. You know, they say, you know, I support the troops. You know, people wear the bumper stickers on their cars or will wear the T-shirts. Mm-hmm. But to actually go out and do something about it and do it.
Okay. Yes. Jay, why don't you chime in, sir?
Well, I just wanted to remind our listeners who might have tuned in a couple of minutes late. We have a special guest in the studio right now, and John is handling the interview. But this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And with us we have Sal Haji and also David Dyer. And they're both associated with the Freedom Center. But Sal is the field operations director. Mm-hmm. Get the title right. That's good. And David is both a writer and a poet, too, by the way. Sometimes people think, writer, he just, scribbles something. But I want to ask you, before we go back to John's questions, what's your book about? You said, is it a novel or is it an autobiography?
It is a story of my brother, Wayne, Dr. Wayne Dyer, who passed away about a month ago, and how we grew up in boarding homes when my father left us when we were like 2, 4, and 6, my two brothers.
A lot of people may be familiar with Dr. Wayne Dyer, because he was on Channel 56, and of course he sold all kinds of motivational and spiritual renewal type books without being necessarily connected with any particular religious direction, but a very big, I think, help to a lot of people who needed guidance and uplifting over the years. And the title of your book then is?
From Darkness to Light.
And it's already?
It was published. It was published in 2 years ago.
Okay, From Darkness to Light. We'll mention that.
Balboa Press, and it's available on Amazon.
Right. Yeah, well, we... Thank you very much for doing that. I know a lot of people that are familiar with his writings, like myself. I have a couple of his books. One was an interpretation of a Chinese religious book, Tao Te Ching or something like that.
Yeah,
that
reinterpreted. Tao or
right. Yeah, that still gives me moments of reflection every day when I turn open to different chapters and read some of his interpretations, which, and I don't want to brag, but I have a little background in this, and his interpretations and translations were really on target, but he expanded things so well. So I'm sure that your book, From Darkness to Light, will be great for any of your... any of the people out there remember Wayne Dyer?
His first book, Your Erroneous Zones, was published in 1976.
Right.
And since then, that became the best-selling book of the entire decade of the 70s.
Sort of a tricky title. A lot of people misread it and thought it was Your Erotic Zones.
Yeah.
It's Your Erroneous Zones. And it really is a great breakthrough work in really guiding popular psychology. Well, back to the Freedom Center. And Sal, it seems to me, just from my reflection here, that there's several groups that are doing different kinds of things for veterans. I mean, nonprofit groups that have come about, and we can never do enough, I think, for our returning veterans. But the Freedom Center, and besides your great locations at the airports too, for when the veterans get off the planes, they can find you, or if they have to get on another plane to go somewhere, they can still come by. And I saw a picture of one of the new lounges there at the airport, which looks very welcoming. And but you've got connections with these
other
groups in case they need specialized help that Freedom Center knows how to connect them.
Well, I've met several different groups, you know, in my 5 years of my son being in the Marine Corps, obviously. And what's been fortunate for me and a blessing is that we have succeeded so well in getting sponsorships and donations from various businesses and individuals that I reach out to these other organizations who jump right in. You know, there's Fallen and Wounded Soldiers Fund, and there's Returning Wounded Warriors of, you know, here locally in Dearborn. So I reach out to those organizations, and whatever the needs of the individuals, the returning veterans, whether they're disabled or not, whatever their needs might be, if we can fulfill it, we do. We reach out to the veterans, and we will go to their homes and take whatever the supplies that they need.
Now, just a comment from me, and of course, John always usually does the qualifier. All opinions in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, but we thank them for their allowing us to state them as fairly as we can. It seems a shame that groups with sort of a similar general purpose, whether it's I know several groups that are in favor of peace and peace activism, but there's three or four in Michigan. Now, they each have their own direction and mission within it, but they're not very well coordinated in terms of maybe having a greater reach. This is true of environmental groups, too. I mean, there's Sierra Club, but then there's all kinds of other little individual neighborhood groups. And I know just because you're with volunteers and you're set up with a specific mission that you want to accomplish successfully, it's hard to spend time reaching out and then maybe joining a bigger group that might in some way water down your effect. Is that the problem, do you think, with the outreach or the connections with bigger groups? You just want to continue doing what you're doing well, I guess, right?
Well, I think with what we are doing a great job by being able to reach out to some of the groups. I mean, yes, everybody's got their own little pockets of areas that they service. So, I mean, most of the groups don't really branch out and take care of the whole state. You're not, you know, you're not going to have that as far as most of the little, because like you said, we are volunteers, and we are volunteers located in our own little communities that we work with. But what's beautiful is that we can reach out to the other communities around us and see where the help can be and where the need is.
And just to be clear, my point about the organizations joining together more, and that's because the root cause of some of the problems with returning veterans is their health care is not usually forthcoming as it should be, as it was promised.
That's a
government thing. And to lobby the government or different agencies is a political sort of thing, and that's really something different. I mean, you just want to provide the services now, but of course, to solve some of the problems that are that you're needing to serve could be done in our society, but it takes political lobbying.
It does. And a lot of the returning veterans don't always seek out the help, which is unfortunate. And number one for being able to be recognized and start your case is to jump on board and joining your local VFWs or American Legions, because that's where the knowledge is and that's where the contacts are. You get somebody, you get a caseworker that's going to take you on and walk you through the steps that you need to get the credits or whatever, you know, if you're applying for your disability or if you're just applying for, you know, simple items, you need to get that started. And a lot of them don't, because a lot of our returning warriors are wounded and their wounds can't be seen.
Well, right.
There's and unfortunately, they close themselves off even to their loved ones and their families.
Yeah.
And it takes a special person to be able to reach to them, to get them to come out and talk about it.
You know, what can you delineate the difference, if any? I mean, if a veteran is listening right now and he just needs a little bit of support, and he thinks, well, maybe the friendship or the camaraderie of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, VFW or American Legion, might be the right way to start. I mean, it's just like a boys' club or a girls' club. They have girls, women in those groups too? I don't know.
There's women.
Okay. Yeah. Is there any difference between, or much difference between VFW and...
Well, the VFW is for veterans who have fought in a foreign
war. Oh, just the foreign war. Yeah. But the American Legion could be any veteran.
Anybody. Yes. And it could even be police officers, firemen.
I see.
I've known them to be members of them.
I'm
going to
jump in here for a second and tell you that it took me 37 years before I talked about Vietnam.
Well, yes.
I worked in an evacuation hospital there and saw death and destruction on a daily basis. Yeah. Hmm. And I suppressed all of it. And like I said, it took me 37 years until I gave up alcohol and I picked up a pen.
That's a great outlet, yes.
The words just came pouring out faster than I could put them on paper.
Yeah, I have dedicated
the rest of my life to keeping the memories alive of those who gave their lives.
And okay, I'm going to make it a little political here, just for myself, not for my guest. But you know, the problems caused by war are such, not just to the veterans, but to the environment, to the geography, to national resources. There's such, we shouldn't have war. I mean, maybe everybody can agree that there's really no good reason for war any time. There should always be, and we need to work towards this, folks, other options to war. But our brave men that volunteer when our government says it's needed, they've got to be taken care of. They've got to be honored, respected, and given every possible assistance when they come back. And if they don't want to talk about it for a while, fine. But let them know that they have people they can talk to, and they have resources available, and they'll be honored for that service. That's something too. A lot of people coming back, like even just finding jobs. Do you help in job placement too at the Freedom Center?
We do. We have a lady that works with us. Her name's Nancy Zimbardi. She's always sending me local job postings, and I will share them with individuals who are looking for work. But it's not always that easy. It's hard for them to get acclimated to the civilian world to take on that job. So that's the biggest problem, is getting them ready to work.
Because they need some sort of job skills, which they didn't necessarily learn in the military.
It's not just that. Yeah. It's just the fact of being able to work with other people, to be in close quarters. I mean, if you have a returning veteran with PTSD and you're putting him to work in a big shop, big factory, the simple noises will trigger flashbacks of his wartime.
Yes. Thank you, Sal. I also wanted to know what is a good contact number or website that we can that the folks can get a hold of you.
Any support that can be given towards the Freedom Center could be directly to our website, which is mifreedomcenter.org.
Very good. Okay.
And as far as contacting me directly, it's sal.haji, H-A-J-I, at mifreedomcenter.org as well.
Sal.haji.
Yes.
Okay. Haji, yes.
And do you have any events coming up that
we
are...
We do. We just did an event this Sunday. I also want to let your listeners know that the last Sunday of September every year is a national holiday to recognize the fallen heroes for the Gold Star families, those who were killed in combat. We just hosted an event in conjunction with a Troy VFW where we had a luminary initiative. We had Fox 2 out, and they covered it and aired it at 10 o'clock news, which was very nice, but it was great. We had the Gold Star Mothers and the president of the Gold Star Mothers attend this event, where we lit luminaries lighting the path on Maple Road from John R. to DeQuinder.
Wow.
And each sack that we lit had a name on it of a fallen hero. We have 213 just from the state of Michigan since Iraq and Afghanistan. So we had their names on the bags. So we did do that. We do have an upcoming event October 22nd, which is the Michigan Armed Forces Hospitality Center Gala. and that's going to be in Sterling Heights. If you're interested in helping us and showing support, you can purchase your tickets online at gala.mifreedomcenter.org. That's available. And in November, we'll have another event that we work in conjunction with the VFW Berkeley, who also allows us to have our meetings there every month at no charge to us. So it's nice for us to come together with the families. Mm-hmm. But we're going to do a spaghetti dinner fundraiser to collect toys for tots in working with the United States Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. We are going to have Santa there, and we're going to have some Marines in uniform, and the Marine Corps Reserves will be there to collect all the toys for the kids. And that one is on November 14th in Berkeley, at the Berkeley VFW.
Well, thank you very much. Is there anything you want to sum up as far as how your operation's working right now?
Well, our operation's going great. I just want everybody to know that, you know, with what we do, we can never do enough. If you know a service member or have served or is serving, take the time and say thank you to them, because your freedom isn't free.
Wow. And of course, and so thank you, Sal, for being on the air with us today. David, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Very great.
Appreciate your coming to the studio today. John has been attending meetings for a while, as you folks know, and we wanted to get you on so that all of our listeners can actually find a way and make a connection to help out the cause. So
thank you
for being on the Journal today. Here's a comment on the Hubbard statue being moved, and this is from Jack Lessenberry. This is his recorded commentary that was on the Michigan Radio website. So we'll be back with more Dearborn news and area news right after this commentary from Jack Lessenberry.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. When I was young, I was proud that I didn't live in Dearborn, whose mayor for life, Orville Hubbard, was a bizarre brawling clown who wore outlandish bow ties. Hugely fat, he would do anything for publicity. Pose with a boa constrictor, wear a giant paper bag, or straddle Michigan Avenue looking like a bargain basement Mussolini, you name it. He raised parakeets in his office and often sat there in his underpants. He humiliated department heads, once making one get down on all fours and bark like a dog. And he was a famously open racist. Everybody knew that his slogan, "Keep Dearborn Clean," meant keep it white. During the Civil Rights Movement, he was happy to tell the New York Times that he favored complete segregation to avoid a mongrel race. If African Americans were foolish enough to try to move in, he boasted that he had the police hassle them till they left. "I'm not a racist, I just hate the black bastards," he once said. Nevertheless, Dearborn loved him. He was first elected mayor in 1941 and was constantly re-elected by huge margins. Despite his appalling tendencies, he ran a city that provided amazing local services, including a summer camp and a retirement community in Florida. Never conventional, he left his wife and lived with Maureen Keene, a young local beauty queen turned mayoral aide who nursed him through his last term after he'd been incapacitated by a stroke. She then attempted to be elected mayor herself, but failed. Hubbard finally retired in 1978 and died 4 years later. In 1989, the city erected a statue of him in front of Dearborn's old city hall. Yesterday, they finally took the statue down and carted it away to the Dearborn Historical Museum. The people running Dearborn today were mostly relieved. Mayor Jack O'Reilly said there was a lot of damage done to his city's reputation during Hubbard's time. Today's Dearborn is at least one-third Arab American, and Dawood Walid, one of their leaders, told the Detroit News that Hubbard's vision is thankfully not the Dearborn of today. Yet, Hubbard was a complex personality. David Good, a former editor at the News, wrote a magnificent biography of Hubbard, Orvie, the Dictator of Dearborn. Last night, Good told me, "As appalled as I was by much of what he said and did, I liked Hubbard. I knew what he was and liked him anyway. He was a fascinating personality, never boring, by far the most interesting person I ever met." David Good thinks sending the statue to the Dearborn Historical Museum makes sense, though his first choice would have been the Henry Ford Museum's Civil Rights exhibit. Good said something else you should remember. "In a lot of ways, Dearborn wasn't that different from a lot of other lily-white suburbs a half century and more ago, except for Orville Hubbard. Hubbard said stuff out loud that reflected the views not only of a lot of his constituents, but white folks in nearby suburbs as well." There's a lot of truth in that, and there are many people, black and white, who would give anything today for the quality of city services Hubbard's Dearborn provided. That, too, might be worth thinking about, even if it's good that that his statue is gone.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
You are listening to WHFR 89.3 FM, Henry Ford College. Across this state, across this country, across this continent, today, right now, College Radio is united. This is College Radio Day.
1985, 1986.
WHFR has been on the air for 30 years. During that time, WHFR has had hundreds of staff members. Were you one of those past members of WHFR? What year were you a part of the station?
1992.
Whatever the year was, we're calling out on you, the alumni of WHFR Radio. Join us to celebrate WHFR's 30th year on the air.
1997.
On Saturday, October 3rd, we are having an alumni reunion party.
2000.
WHFR will be holding an open house and reception at the Pavilion of HFC's Student Center and Culinary Arts Building. There will be tours of the radio station and a dinner in the pavilion area. If you're interested in attending or need more information on the event, please email WHFR's operations manager, Laura Rassay, at whfr@hfcc.edu. Or you could give her a call at 313-317-6539, the WHFR Alumni Reunion Party.
2012.
So many years, so many memories. Come share them with us at HFC's Student Center on October 3rd.
2015.
WHFR, 30 years on the air, and we are just getting started.
And the WHFR Journal is just getting continuing. Thank you for listening today. October 2nd, National College Radio Day. Proud to be part of that movement and that unique mission to give you entertainment and information you can't get anywhere else in your dial. And, of course, this hour is, well, some of that kinds of entertainment. Some of that kinds of information, of course. I hope we can be entertaining too at times, in terms of challenging you and your ideas to see new points of view. I know it's all very pompous sounding, but it's still important that you get information from many different sources, many different points of view, and draw some conclusions and then act on them. That's what's necessary in a democracy, and we all love democracy, don't we? Okay. Well, looking at the news of the week from our local Dearborn papers and other downriver sources, we see that, of course, the Jack Lessenberry commentary about the movement of the Orville Hubbard statue. It was taken down because it was time that they were, you know, renovating the former Dearborn City Hall in what's now called, referred to still informally as East Dearborn at Michigan Road and Schaefer, is being renovated and turned into a art space facility for artists and living spaces for artists and meeting rooms, work rooms, and of course galleries too. And that is hoping to open to some extent, I think, in 2016. I'm not sure if I think they might start with the artist. I'm not sure if the gallery space and the others will be open at the same time, but I know there's some aspects will be getting started next year. They're still trying to figure out the residential situation, and there's an application process and so on. But so the statue had to be moved, and it's been discussed for a couple of months, but really sort of off the record. I didn't see it in minutes of the Dearborn City Council. Just something to be decided by the mayor's office, I think, with his advisors from different departments about what to do. The last we had heard here, and the last I heard, was that the statue would be moved to a small park near the back or the east side parking lot of the new Dearborn Administrative Center, where the City Hall activities and government offices are for Dearborn, in sort of the middle of the city. That is on Michigan Avenue, not East Dearborn, not West Dearborn, but just south of Ford Motor Company. That's the Dearborn Administrative Center location. And the idea was to create a little park and put a statue outdoors there, but not park facing the street, facing Michigan Avenue, or visible even from Michigan Avenue. That's the last I heard. In fact, a source of mine that I asked about this actually made a call to a very in-touch local business person who should know exactly what's going on. And that's what he said last Tuesday morning. And then whoop-de-doo, last Tuesday afternoon, this last Tuesday afternoon comes this press release stating that the statue is going to be moved instead, not instead, but definitely moved to the Dearborn Historical Museum. And that, of course, story was picked up by several news services in and around this area, including the two major newspapers, because of the very controversial nature of Orville Hubbard's tenure as mayor. Definitely, he was a segregationist, did not believe that black and white people should live in the same communities, at times, some of the things he said about black people, again, this was in a time, and Jack Lessenberry was totally right, it was a time in the 40s and 50s, and I remember growing up in the 50s in Detroit, that a lot of people were making what we'd call horribly racist statements, but they were doing it all the time, not necessarily in the media. And we really have grown out of that, although maybe, as some people have said, it's more internalized now. And that would be unfortunate, because there's no way to stop it if it's internal belief system that is a kind of sneaky approach to racism. But he did a lot of good things for Dearborn other than that. And so it's interesting that besides my suggestion, which has been the last 2 months on the air, to have that, and it never was mentioned before Tuesday afternoon, other than by me, as far as I know, to go to the Dearborn Historical Museum. Maybe somebody was listening to my show. Imagine, John, people might be listening to us and actually following through on something we say. That's scary, though. Hang on. There you go.
Okay. Well, we certainly hope they're listening to our show.
Well, that's right. And they don't have to do what we say, because we're not always right. But we just want to challenge people to think it through check their sources and figure out what's best. So a lot of people have agreed it was a good decision, other than myself, because the Historical Museum, and they're not they're not sure what they're going to do with the statue right now. Will they put him outside by their front door, visible from Brady Street, their main entrance or their parking lot, or will they take and put his statue indoors somewhere if they had the space, and a special exhibit to also tell you about his background and history, certainly after 42 years as mayor. In fact, he's the longest serving mayor so far in the history of the United States.
Wow.
Anywhere.
Okay.
So that's a career that's special. Again, he's known for a lot of very positive things in Dearborn, but the negatives almost balance out or overwhelm the positives for many people. So even though there is that controversy, it's good to understand him as a complete human being. The book that Jack Lessenberry recommended, the author's name is David Good, and it's a good book, therefore, right? And the book is called Orvi. I think with an exclamation mark, just like Jeb with an exclamation mark now, Jeb Bush running for president. So that was published, I think, 10 or more years ago. It's been out a while, so maybe you can get that from a Dearborn Public Library. You know, they're still open. I bet they've got some copies here locally. But apparently it's a well-balanced book that talks about the good and the bad of Orville Hubbard. And in fact, there was someone made a comment that I just heard, and maybe I even suggested it, that maybe an exhibit at Greenfield Village in their civil rights section. Certainly he's not anyone that was in favor of civil rights, but he was the enemy, or a certain kind of enemy, for many years. Again, representing, as Lessenberry said, a lot of views of other suburban mayors and people in the 40s and the 50s, white people, and that was very unfortunate. But I think Dearborn Historical Museum is an appropriate venue. It's just a question of how to display it appropriately. I bet it's going to take some discussion there by the curator and the friends of the museum, the great local volunteers that keep that going with fundraising, like the beer tasting event a couple of weeks ago. Hope you've recovered from that, folks. and you know, that they have to find the right way to do it. And it might take even some additional fundraising to create a special space or display or lighting or something if he's indoors or outdoors. So he, the statue. Okay, so moving on with other stories here from the Dearborn Papers. A great couple stories you should catch in the Press and Guide last Sunday about the Dearborn School Board are tackling several issues during a special meeting, which I think they've already had. And a couple of personality pieces about the new Dearborn Superintendent Malico, talking about how he's enjoying being in Dearborn even after a couple of months here, and he's progressing with his vision for what he wants to do with the schools and the challenges. So I think definitely he is now qualified. I mean, he's gotten in and he sees what the situation is, so he's qualified to be invited onto the WHFR Journal. Oh boy. So we'll try to get him in the next couple of months into the hot seat here. We'll grill him. Oh, and speaking of grilling, well, they don't grill pasta, but there's an annual pasta dinner coming up. Any excuse to go to the next story, you know?
What a good segue.
Yeah. the Dearborn Animal Shelter, one of our favorite nonprofits in this area, among many. They got to have money all the time. The animals need it to keep them alive, to keep them safe, and to cure them from any ills or physical damage that might have come upon them out in the wild. And our city is definitely wild. That's my next segue, by the way. So that second annual pasta dinner is going to be at Park Place on October 12th. So you figure it out, 10 days from now. Yeah, what would that be?
10 days, yeah.
A week from Monday? 5 and 7 is the 12th. Yeah, week from Monday.
Yeah.
So you can probably find out more at the Dearborn Animal Shelter website. And just, I think it's dearbornanimals.org or something like that. But just put in Dearborn Animal Shelter into your browser and find out about that. Apparently it's the second annual pasta dinner. And all Park Place has great food. We had one of our own benefits there earlier this year. And they provided the food. But this is a special recipe sauce from a gentleman in the community who's put that together. So it sounds delicious.
We should name him.
Sure.
His name is Pat D'Ambrosio. And it's a cost of $30. It includes pasta, salad, bread, beer, wine, soft drinks, and dessert. Children five and younger are free.
Yep, and we know what the basic cost is to put those things on. I mean, we charged a little more, but we had a big time blues band that we brought in too, and we had open bar. Well, open bar is more than just beer and wine, but and we charge $50. But that's, you know, it cost about $20 to $30 a person, depending on the dinner, to put that on. Now maybe, you know, I know Park Place gave us a tremendous discount as a nonprofit, and I'm sure they're doing the same for the animal shelter. But the basic costs remain the same. Somebody's got to pay that $20 to $25. It takes a lot of people to operate those facilities, and I know Park Place, I'm sure, is making their contribution. But don't be afraid about the price. That's very reasonable. I mean, you know, they just did a black tie and tails dinner, or is it still coming up? Anyway, that's going to be at Dearborn Inn again, and that's like, it seems like it's $150 a person. So, but however you can relate, you know, WHFR, we have a benefit coming up in November, a blues benefit, and it's only $5 a person.
That's
so
cheap.
However you can relate to the animals, whatever kind of special event or food, like great pasta dinner with a great sauce from Mr. D'Ambrosio.
Family yeah. recipe, of
there
course.
You go.
Secret family recipe.
Secret family recipe. Yeah. Okay. So we highly recommend that you not only, of course, go to these events, but help support them by volunteering and telling your friends about these events, too.
Well, speaking of the event, Jay, have you mentioned our alumni event tomorrow?
Well, I just played the announcement. I wanted to mention, though, as a follow-up, thanks for bringing me back to that, also that any WHFR staff alumni, if you were a member of WHFR staff, anytime, well, even the people who were on staff before we got on the air in 85, we were a club here on campus with the Express Goal of going on air, of getting a station of our own since 1962. So I'd even love to have some of those people come on by. That's right here at the main campus of Henry Ford College Student Center. We're going to be around from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock, actually greeting, talking to, getting information about, and actually recording some interviews with all of these alumni. Each of them have unique stories and backgrounds, and we want to find out a little bit that we can preserve, not extensive oral histories, but little short comments about things that they remember and highlights of their time with us, because we couldn't be here without all those volunteers,
That's right.
As well as, of course, our current volunteers. And at 6 to 8, there's going to be some presentations, speeches, and yes, we will have food and beverages, non-alcoholic, but we'll have some food and beverages here, and then maybe people will break up into affinity groups, I call them in my head, people that want to go to the same places together, to local venues or other restaurants for another meal or something, to sort of continue the party, either in larger and or smaller groups. Or you could go home if you want to, if you get tired. But please come by, especially 3 to 6 o'clock, so we can talk to you, get down your information, get you get a picture of you. We want to take pictures, yeah. And we want to honor you appropriately for helping with this noble experiment in our 30th year here. So it's a very special week. We have reunions frequently, and we always love to see alumni at all of our, at any of our events, to come by and say hello. We know that we have many alumni on Facebook found out about it. One of our first female program director, her name was Linda Kulchick.
Cool chick.
And she was always referred to, nickname was, hey, you're a cool chick. Yeah, sexist day today, I guess. But she was our first staff volunteer program director in, I think, 86 or 87. She's a truck driver these days, listening to the radio as she drives across the United States. And tomorrow, she just let me know, she's going to be in Colorado driving.
Oh. Yeah. Won't be able to stop in.
No, can't come from Colorado, but, you know, we hope. She's actually based in Florida, but where she lives with family, I know. But the next time, Linda, if you're listening somehow to a podcast or whatever, come on by Dearborn the next time your route takes you here to Michigan. Please stop in and say hello anytime, because we value all the contributions, the positive contributions of our many thousands of volunteers. Imagine over the 30 years how many volunteers that we've had, and several of them have gone off to careers in radio and broadcasting, but that wasn't the whole idea. The idea was to keep doing good things on the air right here, and keep our mission successful. And if it helped their lives and careers, I think it added something special for them. I'm fairly sure of that for most people that were here. And we want to get the full story tomorrow. So even if you haven't somehow contacted Laura Rousset, as it says in that spot, or myself, or on Facebook or something, you're totally welcome. Just walk on by, okay? So it's the Student Center, Henry Ford College, main campus, 5101 Evergreen, just south of Ford Road, the same place we had our first studio. We had a little sort of closet, converted closet here. It was our first recorded studio where we recorded the first shows that we put on the air for WHFR. So please come by. No RSVP necessary. That's what I wanted to say. Tomorrow. Also tomorrow, October 3rd, this is very interesting to me. Henry Ford College and U of M Dearborn, they're doing the first annual International Gandhi Day of Service. So as a peacenik myself, as I indicated in my last interview there, I'm not against freedom and fighting for it. I just don't want to fight for it in a violent way. I think there's all kinds of ways to achieve the noble goal. And of course, Mahatma Gandhi was the leader of India that found a peaceful, nonviolent way to kick the British out of their country, which is one of the largest countries of the world in terms of population and area. I think it's in the top three there. Yes, it took something like 30 years from the beginning of his efforts to organize. Well, they have something like 700 million people, must have more by now in India. But Anyway, it was Gandhi that was behind that. So HFC for Tomorrow is encouraging students, faculty, staff, and community members to participate and help with various projects. Some of the agencies you may choose include Habitat for Humanity, Dearborn Animal Shelter, and the Starfish Family Services. So it's tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Notice it ends a half an hour before our alumni reunion party because they got to make room for us, right?
And it is also here at the Student Center?
Right. That's what I say. It takes place in those times, but they want all volunteers are supposed to meet at the Mary Kochoff Auditorium. That's the 10:30 is the address. Castle Building, CASL Building on the University of Michigan Dearborn campus, and registration for those that want to help. This doesn't make sense. It says begins at 10:30. Well, if the event takes place starting at 10 a.m., I think they must mean 9:30. Okay, if you have any questions, Office of Student Activities here may still have somebody in there for the next couple hours today. 313-845-9865. And that's again 313-845-9865 for HFC Student Activities Office about the Gandhi Day of Service. So that's students, faculty, staff, and community members to participate and help with various projects for nonprofits locally. And they've got a few locations where you could just volunteer your services, but it's to honor the public action resolution, and I should say the nonviolent public action of Mahatma Gandhi, a great leader in India, who achieved final freedom from England and their domination in the late 40s. Okay. Coming up today, in just 5 minutes, is going to be Highway 61, The Best in the Blues. And sitting in for Joanne Kay today is Kitty Love, returning to the airways for pretty much of the afternoon. If she gives me a chance, I might sit in for a while and try to push some records on her turntable. Yeah, maybe Zydeco. But you want to say a comment there about the show?
Oh, it's coming up in a little bit here. Sitting in for Joanne Kay, and she gets some time off. So.
Yes, it's all good. She's got a family reunion with her sons and their families up north of their cabin. Yeah. It's a cabin that they all grew up with.
I don't think her show has ever been pre-recorded. We've always had someone for
right.
her show.
That wouldn't be any fun with Joanne pre-recorded.
Kitty Love, just sit in.
That's right, yes. And you've been helping her out the last couple of weeks, so you...
I'm back.
Yes, she's back, yes. And we so glad. Welcome her back to the airways. And that's just 5 minutes away. So real quick, John, let's see here what we've got to cover. Oh, real quickly, folks, if you live in Dearborn, you got a pamphlet in the mail this week, and maybe some of you called the Dearborn Department of whatever, DPW, Department of Water, whatever. They have they are requiring assemblies on a number of devices in homes that you may have. For example, they've had this these anti-siphoning devices or backflow prevention devices are on all new plumbing. Right. It required all new plumbing in Dearborn bathrooms, especially bathtubs and shower units. But I just noticed in this brochure that there's required installation of these devices also on lawn watering systems. And so anybody that's buying a lawn watering system, you should have one of these backflow devices in line to prevent contaminated groundwater from getting back into the water supply and making that unsafe for the rest of us. So that's why they do it. But also here, the big shocker to me is they want a hose bib, B-I-B, vacuum breaker on all outdoor hose connections. So like if the hose is trailing down on the ground, as mine are right now, the nozzle may actually act if there is a water passing by in the system, a vacuum happens in the system, and so outdoor water, which might be contaminated, some kind of bacteria or mosquito larvae or I don't know what, but it could get back into the system. So they want you to install one of these hose bib vacuum breakers on all your outdoor hose connections at the faucet. Okay. And I just checked on the price today on Amazon.com, who are charging tax now, folks, to pay for the Michigan's tax. Thanks, State of Michigan, for putting that in place. Anyway, about $7 or $8 each for those extra little screw-in brass fixtures that prevent this kind of siphoning, backflow, which is not good. So the other things like long irrigation, potable supplies to a boiler, potable water supply to solar energy unit, to pools, fire sprinkler systems, those all need these devices, and those must be tested at least every 3 years by a licensed plumber. The city of Dearborn doesn't do that for you, and they don't say what the punishment is, but it's required. So they might be able to come out, and if you can't show that the test was done for these specialized devices, not for the hose bib things, but for the specialized devices, they might give you a ticket of some sort, a fine. So watch out for that. Oh, my goodness. 2 minutes, John?
Jay, I want to shout out to my son, Jack, on the occasion of his 34th birthday tomorrow. Happy birthday, Jack.
Yep.
He's in Arlington, Virginia. Also, today is our homecoming football game and parade on Gross Hill.
Gross Hill High School.
4:30 in the afternoon is the parade and the football game following with Milan. Tomorrow is, actually all weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, is the Scarecrow Fest in Trenton.
That's right.
Lots of festivities, music, food, all kinds of great stuff.
Yep. And, get out there and enjoy all these different kinds of local events, especially the ones that benefit nonprofit organizations. As long as we're ending with the summary of things, I noticed that Global Fridays at the Arab American Center, Arab American National Museum, this is the date for this month, tonight. They have a group called the Krar Collective, K-R-A-R. They're an Ethiopian roots funk band all the way from Africa, from Ethiopia, and they do roots funk music, and that's tonight, October 2nd, part of Global Fridays at the Arab American National Museum on Michigan Avenue near Schaefer. And of course, more information, go to arabamericanmuseum.org. That event, let's see, concert starts at 8 tonight, by the way, and That's again, once a month. You don't get kind of world-quality, challenging entertainment, which is what we always try to present here on WHFR, whether it's from the local area or anywhere else that you just can't get from any other source. That's what Global Fridays does once a month, and again tonight at 8 o'clock at Arab American National Museum, Krar Collective, an Ethiopian rocks roots funk group. Okay. And I guess we can sum up.
One more.
Go ahead.
Yep. Tonight is another night with the Joe's Top Dog Jazz Fridays. The Rich Michaels Trio will be there, as well as the guest tonight is Shahida Norella, a vocalist. Mm-hmm. And I attended last Friday's show, and it was terrific. Johnny Trudell was the featured guest, as well as the trio. Mm-hmm. Just a great night. Really good.
Wonderful. Okay.
Great food as well, Jay.
final little comments. I highly recommend you get a copy. Everybody in Dearborn, by the way, get a free copy. It's free, folks. Find out where you can get a free copy of the Detroit Metro Times, because this week they have like 8 or 9 investigative stories. I'm saying investigative stories, opinions, and things they've investigated about Detroit. A couple stories, maybe you didn't hear. Detroit is no longer the murder capital of the United States. Yeah. In terms of per capita, we're